Chapter 129. Missionary Sermon. With some reflections, some degree of order at length restored, the service was continued by singing. The choir was composed of 12 or 15 ladies of the mission, occupying a long bench to the left of the pulpit. Almost the entire congregation joined in. The first air fairly startled me. It was the brave tune of Old Hundred, adapted to a Tahitian psalm. After the graceless scenes I had recently passed through, this circumstance, with all its accessories, moved me forcibly. Many voices around were of great sweetness and compass. The singers, also, seemed to enjoy themselves mightily, some of them pausing, now and then, and looking round, as if to realize the scene more fully. In truth, they sang right joyously, despite the solemnity of the tune. The Tahitians have much natural talent for singing, and, on all occasions, are exceedingly fond of it. I have often heard a stave or two of psalmody, hummed over by rakish young fellows, like a snatch from an opera. With respect to singing, as in most other matters, the Tahitians widely differ from the people of the Sandwich Islands, where the parochial flocks may be said rather to eat than sing. The psalm concluded, a prayer followed. Very considerately, the good old missionary made it short, for the congregation became fidgety and inattentive as soon as it commenced. A chapter of the Tahitian Bible was now read, a text selected, and the sermon began. It was listened to with more attention than I had anticipated. Having been informed, from various sources, that the discourses of the missionaries, being calculated to engage the attention of their simple auditors, were, naturally enough, of a rather amusing description to strangers. In short, that they had much to say about steamboats, Lord Mayor's coaches, and the way fires are put out in London, I had taken care to provide myself with a good interpreter, in the person of an intelligent Hawaiian sailor, whose acquaintance I had made. "Now, Jack," said I, "before entering, hear every word, and tell me what you can as the missionary goes on." Jack's was not, perhaps, a critical version of the discourse, and at the time, I took no notes of what he said. Nevertheless, I will here venture to give what I remember of it, and, as far as possible, in Jack's phraseology, so as to lose nothing by a double translation. "Good friends, I glad to see you, and I very well like to have some talk with you today. Good friends, very bad times in Tahiti, it make me weep. Pommeree is gone, the island no more yours, but the wee wees, French, wicked priests here too, and wicked idols in woman's clothes, and brass chains. Good friends, know you speak, or look at them, but I know you won't, they belong to a set of robbers, the wicked wee wees. Soon these bad men be made to go very quick. Baritani ships of thunder come, and away they go. But no more about this now. I speak more bye-bye. Good friends, many whale ships here now, and many bad men come in them. No good sailors living that you know very well. They come here, cause so bad they no keep them home. My good little girls, no run after sailors, no go where they go, they harm you. Where they come from, no good people talk to them just like dogs. Here, they talk to Pommeree, and drink arva with great poofy. Good friends, this very small island, but very wicked, and very poor, these two go together. Why Baritani so great? Because that island good island, and send Mikanari to poor Kanka and Baritani, every man rich. Plenty things to buy, and plenty things to sell. Houses bigger than Pommeree's, and more grand. Everybody to ride about in coaches, bigger than hers, and wear fine tappa every day." Several luxurious appliances of civilization were here enumerated and described. "Good friends, little to eat left at my house. Schooner from Sydney no bring bag of flour, and Kanaka no bring pig and fruit enough. Mikanari do great deal for Kanaka, Kanaka do little for Mikanari. So, good friends, we've plenty of cocoa nut baskets, fill 'em, and bring 'em tomorrow. Such was the substance of great part of this discourse, and, whatever may be thought of it, it was specially adapted to the minds of the islanders, who are susceptible to no impressions, except from things palpable, or novel and striking. To them, a dry sermon would be dry indeed. The Tahitians can hardly ever be said to reflect. They are all impulse. And so, instead of expounding dogmas, the missionaries give them the large type, pleasing cuts, and short and easy lessons of the primer. Hence, anything like a permanent religious impression is seldom or never produced. In fact, there is, perhaps, no race upon earth less disposed, by nature, to the monitions of Christianity than the people of the South Seas. And this assertion is made with full knowledge of what is called the Reed Revival at the Sandwich Islands, about the year 1836, when several thousands were, in the course of a few weeks, admitted into the bosom of the church. But this result was brought about by no sober moral convictions, as an almost instantaneous relapse into every kind of licentiousness soon after testified. It was the legitimate effect of a morbid feeling, engendered by the sense of severe physical wants, preying upon minds excessively prone to superstition, and, by fanatical preaching, inflamed into the belief that the gods of the missionaries were taking vengeance upon the wickedness of the land. It is a noteworthy fact that those very traits in the Tahitians, which induced the London Missionary Society to regard them as the most promising subjects for conversion, and which led, moreover, to the selection of their island as the very first field for missionary labor, eventually proved the most serious obstruction. An air of softness in their manners, great apparent ingenuousness and docility, at first misled, but these were the mere accompaniments of an indolence, bodily and mental, a constitutional voluptuousness, and an aversion to the least restraint, which, however fitted for the luxurious state of nature in the tropics, are the greatest possible hindrances to the strict moralities of Christianity. Added to all this is a quality inherent in Polynesians, and more akin to hypocrisy than anything else. It leads them to assume the most passionate interest in matters for which they really feel little or none whatever, but in which, those whose power they dread, or whose favor they court, they believe to be at all affected. Thus, in their heathen state, the Sandwich Islanders actually knocked out their teeth, tore their hair, and mangled their bodies with shells, to testify their inconsolable grief at the demise of a high chief, or member of the royal family. And yet, Vancouver relates that, on such an occasion, upon which he happened to be present, those apparently the most abandoned to their feelings, immediately assumed the utmost lightheartedness on receiving the present of a penny whistle, or a Dutch looking glass. Similar instances, also, have come under my own observation. The following is an illustration of the trait alluded to, as occasionally manifested among the converted Polynesians. At one of the Society Islands, Bayater, I believe the natives, for special reasons, desired to commend themselves particularly to the favor of the missionaries. Accordingly, during divine service, many of them behaved in a manner otherwise unaccountable, and precisely similar to their behavior as heathens. They pretended to be wrought up to madness by the preaching which they heard. They rolled their eyes, foamed at the mouth, fell down in fits, and so were carried home. Yet, strange to relate, all this was deemed the evidence of the power of the Most High, and, as such, was heralded abroad. But, to return to the Church of the Cocoa Nuts. The blessing pronounced, the congregation disperse, enlivening the broom road with their waving mantles. On either hand, they disappear down the shaded pathways, which lead off from the main route, conducting to hamlets in the groves, or to the little marine villas upon the beach. There is considerable hilarity, and you would suppose them just from an old-fashioned ever, or jolly heathen dance. Those who carry Bibles swing them carelessly from their arms by cords of sinnate. The Sabbath is no ordinary day with the Tahitians. So far as doing any work is concerned, it is scrupulously observed. The canoes are hauled upon the beach, the nets are spread to dry. Passing by the hen coop huts on the roadside, you find their occupants idle, as usual, but less disposed to gossip. After service, repose broods over the whole island. The valleys reaching inland look stiller than ever. In short, it is Sunday there, Abu Day, the very word formerly expressing the sacredness of their pagan observances now proclaiming the sanctity of the Christian Sabbath. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.